Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
If there's one thing you don't believe in on the Chicago way, it's beautiful little unicorns that talk to you and fly around. Because there aren't any. This is mayoral politics we're talking about today and raw, ham-fisted ward power. On the mayoral side, we're going to have Bill Daley, candidate for mayor, talking about drones above the city. And also, I'm going to ask him about his friends, the Joyce family and Jeremiah Joyce, and this feud between the Daleys and the Joyces, kind of a brawl amongst the Southside Irish. I'm going to ask him directly. And then we have Michael Dorf, attorney for David Krupa, the young man I wrote about last week in the Chicago Tribune, who's being squeezed by powerful forces in the 13th Ward. Oh, who runs the 13th Ward? Maybe it's Mike Madigan, Boss Madigan, the Khan of Madiganistan. With me, as usual, is my friend and Mr. Science, Jeff Carlin, executive producer of the WGN AM radio show, Rokon Show with Anna DeVolantis, every afternoon. And me, I'm John Cass, husband, father. I'm in a big columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and I'm in a huge issue over ham. I ruined everything. I made my whole family. I'm dysfunctional. Everyone hates me. You'll probably read about it in the papers. And for you, where are you? As Bill Daley comes in, as this kid, this 19-year-old kid gets squeezed, you know where you are. You're on the Chicago way. On WGN Plus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
We're talking to Mike Dorf, very experienced election attorney, and the man I talked to last week on the issue of 13th Ward aldermanic candidate David Krupa, who's being squeezed by the Madigan forces. And it's a I guess you'd call it, Michael, a case of political overkill of epic proportions.
Epic fraudulent proportions, yeah.
Why don't you explain it to our listeners, what happened?
Sure. There's a my client, Dave Krupa, is this 19-year-old kid who wants to run for alderman in the 13th Ward against Marty Quinn. And you need 473 good signatures. So he went out and gathered signatures. Now, there's a provision in the election law that says that somebody who signs a petition can file a revocation with the Board of Elections, saying, I signed Dave Krupa's petition, and I changed my mind. I want to take it back. And we heard that some organized people in the 13th Ward, and I still don't know whose fingerprints on it, but there was an organized effort to go to people and get revocations of Dave Krupa's petitions and file them with the state board, with the city board.
These are legal affidavits that people sign saying, I, John Cass, signed David Krupa's petition. I want to revoke that signature. And it's an underscored sign. It's like an
and
oath.
I swear it under oath. I swear it under oath, and it's notarized.
Right.
So this is before we filed our petition. So I'd heard this was going on, so I sent a Freedom of Information Act request to the Chicago Board of Election Commissioners saying, you know, I'd like to have copies of anybody who signed the revocation of petition. And they sent me a thumb drive, because it had so many, a thumb drive with 2,796 revocations of signature, sworn oath saying I signed Dave Krupa's petitions and I changed my mind.
Wait, But you only turned in 1,703 signatures on David.
Right. That's the thing. I called Dave and I said, Dave, you know, we got 2,796 people said they signed your petition and changed their minds. And Dave says, well, I've only collected 1,703. So even before we compared the revocations with our signatures, we knew there were at least over 1,000 false affidavits that were signed. And then when we started comparing, and you know, so we filed our petitions, and then the Quinn people filed a challenge against Dave, and it turned out that they only attached 187 of those revocations because they only could find 187 people in our petitions who had really signed. So that means there were over 2,600 false affidavits that were filed with the City Board of Elections, a government agency. And under the election code, filing false affidavits is a felony. And also under election code, because we also heard that whoever was going around with their notaries and getting these petitions, we're intimidating people and going back and saying, we want you to sign this. And so there's another provision in the election code that says any effort to prevent a person from supporting a candidate is a felony. So we see two absolute felonious acts that have come out of this thing. I've never seen anything like that. I asked the people at the Board of Elections if they'd ever seen anything like that, and they said they hadn't either. So we've got a hearing set for Monday. And I'm going to request first that they throw out all the affidavits that were filed, because they filed a bunch of other affidavits as well in their challenge, that all the affidavits get thrown out, and that the Chicago Board of Election Commissioners refer this to the state's attorney, because this is clearly two felonious violations of the election code.
Mike, I don't play. I play a lawyer just on the Chicago way, but that sounds a lot like outright fraud and defrauding the people of the state and city.
It is, and you know, and oath is an important thing, and you know, we've gotten to a point in our society, in our politics, where you know people are lying all the time, but you know when you lie under oath, it's got to mean something.
So. You have a hearing. I thought there would be two parts to this, and on Tuesday, you would be asking the state's attorney to investigate. No,
right. That's right. Because the way it's going to work is our first hearing is going to be Monday, and that's just a case management thing where we're going to say this is what we want to file, and then they will give us a deadline of Tuesday to file our motion. So the physical paper will be filed with the board on Tuesday requesting the referral to the state's attorney.
If any enterprising journalists are serious about maybe asking questions that Boss Madigan might not like, should they show up at the Board of Elections and maybe run into you and your candidate David Krupa?
We'll be there. The case management conference is at 10:45 on Monday. The board just put out the schedule.
Now
I want to be clear. I don't know it's Madigan. I don't know it's Quinn. I haven't seen anybody's fingerprints yet.
Me too.
It was an organized effort in the 13th Ward to do this.
It could have been an organized group of Quakers from Pennsylvania or Amish. You know, because like you know. English, you know, those people from Witness, from that movie, you know?
It could have been something. And had notaries. Notaries.
Michael Dorf, good luck with this, although I have to say the Chicago Way says it probably won't go anywhere because the prosecutor's a Democrat, the Attorney General, or the Illinois Attorney General is Lisa Madigan, the boss's daughter, and the incoming Attorney General, who you know very well, and so do we, is Kwame Raoul, who says he doesn't want to fish for corruption and took $1 million from Madigan. So why don't you just go to the feds right away?
Well, I've been doing this for a lot of years now. I still believe in the system, and I think we got to try, see if the system works, and if the system doesn't work, then we'll go to alternate law enforcement agencies.
Thank you, Michael Dorf, for being on the Chicago Way.
Good. Thank you, John.
And now our guest on the Chicago Way is a guy who's been on the Chicago Way all his life, Bill Daley, former U.S. Secretary of Commerce, many other titles, and now candidate for mayor of Chicago. Hello.
How are you, John?
I'm great.
Glad to be back. It was about 2 years ago, right about now, that I was on your show.
Yeah, we did this podcast with you.
Yep.
Were you running for governor then?
No. No, I wasn't running for anything.
Sorry.
I should have been running away from you probably that day.
Right. You should, but we both got short legs. We can't run.
Right.
We're not runners.
Yeah, no. No sprinting.
All right, how's the campaign going?
Good. I feel real good about kind of where we're at. You know, it's been about 3 months since Mayor Emanuel announced he wasn't running. I put together a really good team, headed by a fellow who grew up in Chicago, Jorge Neary, done a bunch of campaigns around the country. Good guy, raising money, traveling. I started to do what I kind of, one would describe as sort of a listening tour, but it's really an engaging people, trying to visit as many communities of the 77 I can. And basically, they're small gatherings of 15 to 25 people. Listen to them, talk to them, tell them what I'm about, get their opinions of what's going on in the city. And it's been really enlightening for me, to be frank with you, and enjoyable. You know, I've gone to parts of the city I haven't been to in a few years. A lot of great things going on, a lot of the real difficult things going on. But it's been fun. And most of my friends are surprised that I seem to be enjoying it as much, even because I've never run for office, even though I've been around it my whole life. So it's different to be the candidate, but I'm having fun.
When you were around it before you were a candidate, what did you promise yourself you wouldn't do if you were a candidate? You saw all the mistakes.
Yeah.
You've seen all the mistakes of ego and bad planning and all the rest.
I think two things. One, really taking yourself too seriously, which you can do all of a sudden. You know, you've got lots of people telling you how great you are, and if you believe it, you're really pathetic. At this stage of my life, I'm doing this. I'm not trying to do this to be governor, senator, president. I'm not doing it for, obviously, for an opportunity in the business world someday. I'm at a point in my life I've been lucky on that side of the equation. And so I'm really trying to be pretty blunt about things and where things are. And, you know, in a strange way, John, and you'll probably maybe fall off your chair on this one, I come to this without any of the connections that lots of people have in this race.
Excuse me, your name's not Daley?
No, it is. Yeah. But I've not been in this game in the city, okay? Yeah, Rich was in it. Listen to me, John. I know you're incredulous.
Wait, just tell people what my facial expression
is. Yeah, John's looking at me like I'm crazy or he's going to fall off the chair. But the truth is, I don't have a lot of relationships with these people that are in politics right now. I've known them. I haven't worked with them. I've been in the private sector except two tours in Washington, one with Clinton, as you mentioned, and one with Obama as his chief of staff. So I'm kind of coming to this in a way that I don't owe anyone. Okay, now that's weird for you to think about. But the reality is I don't, because I haven't run for office. I haven't been the elected guy for the last 25 years or something like that. So I feel pretty free to say what's on my mind and what I want to do and not be beholden to someone or some system that you know and I know has been here forever, even though it's much more diminished than you may feel it is. But I'm excited about the opportunity to kind of throw things out on the table and try to make a change in this city.
All right, so I'm going to ask you some questions because how long have we known each other? Like 25, 30 years?
How about a little longer, I hate to tell you, John.
Right.
You're not as young as we think we are.
Full disclosure, my brother, when he was a kid, worked on your brother's first campaign for mayor, I believe. He was one of your...
In 83?
Volunteers, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, he was a volunteer...
Is that why we lost that 83?
Yeah, exactly.
That's why he lost the 83 race.
On the Southwest side.
Yep.
But speaking of the Southwest side,
yeah.
And speaking of people that you don't know and you don't know anybody now.
No, I didn't say I don't know.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
And you've been in business for a long time, so you understand balance sheets. I've always had a question. How much money do you think Jeremiah Joyce made off those airport contracts that your brother got him when he was in, you know, running the duty-free and all that?
To be honest with you, I really have no idea. I mean, obviously, it seems that their animus towards Emmanuel, it must have been substantial, but I have no idea.
But now we've got a situation where guys were calling me up. You got Bill Daly and the Joyces. Can you hear him screaming at the Joyces? And the background is, the last podcast, I talked about what is gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeremiah made a lot of money and under your brother. And now his son, Jerry, is not only running, but he's challenging your petitions of candidacy.
Mm-hmm.
So what is up with the Southside Irish fight?
I have, to be frank with you, John, I have no idea. I have no, I can't imagine.
Because this is the question you wouldn't get from other people.
Yeah, I get it. And I don't think I didn't know you'd ask me this. I have no idea. You know, I mean, I've been out there talking about the issues. They've got their problem or had their problem. He got into the race, I guess, against Emmanuel because they were mad at him. But you know what? The truth is, I'm comfortable with where our petitions are. You know, some people focus on the sort of game of politics and all the inside.
Fun, right?
Well, I think with the problems this city has, you can get your jollies running around challenging petitions. And I could have challenged people. Maybe it just would have been causing them to spend money on lawyers and stuff like that. But I didn't challenge anyone. And I said, let's just get on. Let's get on talking about the issues here. Not, you know, and I get the inside BS that everybody likes to play and wants to watch.
But it's not.
I saw it with your story on this 19-year-old in the 13th ward. I mean, really?
Yeah, that's a little overkill, isn't it?
Well, all due respect to whoever decided to challenge him, did they really fear that this kid's going to win the aldermanic race? Maybe he would, but maybe if he did, maybe that would be good for the system. You know what I mean? You know, he's obviously showing interest. At least he shows an interest, and a lot of young people don't have that desire to get in and run for actual office. So
he's the kind of guy that you bring in, the committeeman calls later and says, hey, do you want a cup of coffee? You've got guts, kid, right? That's what they do.
Yeah, but anyways, so I have no idea what's going
thing,
on. John, I'm telling you, if a stack of Bibles were here, I have no idea
what
it's about.
Think of me as like a holy man. And
come on. We got to be real here. Okay, but I have no idea.
It's remarkable, isn't it, that Jeremiah Joyce's family that owes so much to your brother.
Wait, let me just say something, John. If you made
millions of dollars, and now they're challenging your petitions and talking like tough guys, and they are tough guys, I admit it.
Oh, tough
but,
guys.
You
Come
know
on,
I mean.
That's in the movies. That's a lot
they're
of so,
They're sluggers.
Hey, okay, but how about solving the problems here? You know what? If you're in politics, and you go through a career, or in life, and you're expecting gratitude from people, especially in politics, you're going to be sorely disappointed. So I've been around long enough to say nothing surprises you.
But
this one this one goes pretty close to the edge of saying, but generally nothing surprises me in politics. This one comes about as close, but, you know, everyone can have their fun about running around.
But you've talked to Jeremiah.
No, I have not talked to Jeremiah in months.
Pardon me?
Months. Months.
Have you talked to anybody from their campaign?
I saw his son, the kid who's running. Jerry, the candidate.
Oh, yeah.
Shortly after I announced. And just talked to him and said, you know, here's what I'm doing, you know, blah, blah, blah. And
but you're competing
he said, okay.
for similar votes.
Well,
right?
Look, John, we could spend the whole thing talking about the inside baseball, which is this. Most people don't care about this stuff. People care about, I know.
It's the Chicago way,
But I know it's the Chicago way and the intrigue and this sort of stuff. But, you know, I've been out there for 3 months. As I said, I decided, even though I looked at a bunch of petitions, and there is not a person who filed who doesn't have some problems in their petitions. It's just the process. It's one of the reasons I said, let's lower the numbers. And let's also say, if you sign one petition, and then somebody gets in the race later, now a lot of people got in the race to run against Emanuel. They so hated Emanuel, and they thought that he was vulnerable and blah, blah, blah. Fine. But after that, after the mayor stepped aside, or said he wasn't going to run, pardon me, then others said, okay, maybe I'm going to consider running. And
you were one of them.
And I was one of them. And that's, you know, my decision. But I think those who got in for whatever reason, whether it was a so hated Emanuel, whether they really wanted to lead the city and laying out some vision for that, or just wanted to, you know, have fun sticking it to somebody, that stuff doesn't, I know you're not going to believe me, but it's not something that I like to spend a lot of time worrying about right now. Because this time in this city's future is rather challenging. And who's ever mayor in 5.5 months, at most, I think it is, he or she is going to be faced with a slew of things. And they better have the people who are seriously looking at this race or be in this race, they better have the experience and the relationships and the knowledge and the experience to do this job hitting the ground running, because you've got a teacher's contract up in June, you've got a budget that's got to be put together by September, you got a police contract that still hasn't been done and a fire contract. So this stuff comes at you like a hose pouring down your throat.
You can't be a dilettante and run the city of Chicago. You have to know what you're doing.
Yeah, and I think in a global city, which we are, you've got to have the ability to reach out. I think one of the things the mayor, Emanuel, has done well is the ability to attract business from around the country or around the world to look at Chicago. The technology world, which is a big piece of the jobs of the future. And you better have those relationships and that profile that the world looks at Chicago and looks at the mayor and has some sense that he or she can back up their promises that they make to them when they come here.
You're out with a new commercial, your first big commercial of the year. It's not what I expected. It's not a, I'm Bill Daly, I'm the guy. It's more like the big takeaway. Bill Daly promises no property tax increases.
Right. Yeah.
I'm wondering if I would like you to promise, because I would like you to promise me that you'll give me a rainbow-colored unicorn that I could fly around with, because I don't think either one of those is.
Oh, no,
valid.
I can't give you a unicorn. I'm sorry I can't, because you'd be the first person I give one to. And I'm going to try to figure out how to get some version of a unicorn and deliver it to you. But
thank you.
But I can, and I mean it. The first year, the people are tired of this. I call the question basically of, we have to address this elephant in the room, and I understand the mayor this week's going to give a speech on it. It is a problem that no mayor, no governor, no legislature has tried to do any serious solution. We just wasted 4 years, basically, of a war between Rauner and Madigan. And, you know, he said, she said, pointing at fingers, everybody's corrupt, everybody's evil, everybody's not doing anything. Where'd that get us? We're still sitting here. We have a larger pension liability today than we had 4 years or 8 years ago.
So how can you responsibly say there's not going to be a, you're not going to...
Well, John, let me just tell you. One of the big challenges, if not the big challenge for the next mayor, is to keep a middle class and an upper middle class in this city. And if we keep pounding away on them, on their property taxes, they're going to be where you live pretty soon and out of here, even more so than's happened in the past. And so we've got to send a message both to them that there's maybe help on the way, and to the bureaucrats in the city government and the unions and everybody else that this is a crisis, and we better do something about it. Now, you and I both know the state's in worse shape than the city.
Right.
And the Democrats, I'm glad J.B. Pritzker is the governor-elect and will soon be governor. Democrats control everything in Springfield. There is no excuse anymore for inaction on a whole host
Mike
of issues.
Mike finally has his own governor.
Well, he's got a Democrat.
Right.
He's got an entire majority-controlled veto proof, not there'd be any vetoes, So there is no excuse for no action on these issues, whether it's the economic viability of the state and the city, the gun issue and violence issue that's plaguing this city.
What gun issue?
Well, that's a good point. We went through an entire campaign, and no one talked about it in any serious way, in any way at the state level, okay? And you have an issue in this city on violence and crime. Now, I can't do anything about the guns flowing from Indiana, okay? And you have two big gun shops in the suburbs, one of which, one in 10 guns committing a crime in Chicago comes from that gun shop. Could we at least have maybe a law passed by the legislature that holds those gun shops a little more responsible, like maybe having surveillance film that the police can have access to immediately?
You could.
There's a whole bunch of
issues. You might
want
to pass a law that says Kim Fox, state's attorney, shouldn't be letting people out on I-bonds that are violent and they go around committing crimes.
Well,
how's that?
There's no doubt.
And then you don't have to get into the Second Amendment.
Well, no, I think there's no one solution. I mean, the state's attorney, you know, prosecuting more cases. We had nine people a week ago, about 10 days ago, two weeks ago, shot in Chicago. 2 weeks before that, we had 10 people on a Wednesday shot. Was there any outrage? I didn't see the state's attorney or anybody having it. The other day, a drug deal. Looks like a drug deal gone bad, at least. And the victim won't say a word to the police, according to. So what is happening to this world? The one common denominator is a gun, though, in every one of them. We'll have 3,000 gun shootings in Chicago probably this year. 500 murders. L.A., New York has 100 or less murders a year. Something's not working here, okay? Well, and I think we've got to approach
it. Not enough cops.
No, John, we have more police per capita than L.A., and they have a much lower gun shootings and murders. We have about the same per capita as New York, okay? So we do need more police, but it isn't like we need 10,000. You cannot solve this problem by policing alone. That is a big piece of it, no doubt about it. You know, technology, as I've stated, I would put a camera on every block if I could. I'd have drones throughout the city, okay? And I'll tell you why.
There's probably only two places in the city where you could commit a murder and not be on a camera.
Right? No, that's not true.
One where Michael Scott was killed himself.
No, there's neighborhoods all over the city. Yeah. I'm talking about neighbors, not just in front of a store. Yeah. I'm talking about putting cameras so that people know, I don't care what block it is, the block I live on or the block anybody lives on in any neighborhood, that they know that there is a camera and the criminals would know. When you see a criminal on a block, he looks around and sees, is somebody around or is there a cop around? If he or she has to worry that there may be an aerial surveillance of that area going on at that moment, they may think twice about what they're doing. And it is all connected. And the last piece of this that I did propose, both New York and L.A. have serious violence prevention programs where they intersect these young men, mostly age 18 to 27, okay? And they are very aggressive along with their police departments. It's not running the police department like some people want to think. But they have, in L.A. and New York, violence prevention that those police leadership, and I've talked to many of them in both cities, absolutely believe are an integral part of keeping that crime down, and that's a big piece of why they believe their crime is so much lower than ours. I've committed to put $50 million, if I win, into a program of violence prevention, have a deputy mayor who he or she will drive that, obviously working hand in glove with the police department. So there are things that can be done.
I'm a little concerned about, if I'm wrong, please tell me, but did you propose a police czar above the police superintendent?
No.
It wasn't you. You didn't promote anyone. You didn't suggest that there should be someone above other than
than
the mayor.
No. Right? Some cities have a director of public safety,
but
and police and
you.
Fire fall under that. I don't think there's any need for that. I don't see that at all. And the deputy mayor on violence prevention, that person isn't above the police department. That works hand in glove, as it does in those two cities I mentioned, where the police will tell you that is a big part of their keeping crime down. So if those police officers and leadership in those cities believe it's a good thing, I don't get why people would be suspicious of that, because it is obvious, John, that policing alone does not solve these problems.
This drone idea.
Yeah.
It sounds rather radical. Is this something you just proposed it now, or have you been out with this idea?
I believe technology.
Have you said it before that we should have drones flying around?
I probably have said it to my friends and to my wife or in the dead of night, you know. But I haven't been out on the Chicago Way or other broadcasts over the last couple of years proposing. I did do an op-ed in the Tribune a couple of years ago where I talked about more cameras, more technology. I don't think I referred to drones, to be frank with you.
We could have like a department, like a deputy commissioner of drones.
No, they'd be in the police department, obviously. Oh. And it'd help with all safety. You have an accident, you have a fire. A drone can get to that incident a lot quicker than a guy in a car or a fire truck, to be frank with you. And you could then begin to get real time on what's going on there. And I think it will be a supplement to the police. It may be one more thing that a criminal better think about. And I'm not treating, to be frank with you, John, I don't view that as a, and a lot of my friends and a lot of people kind of think it's a half joke. I don't believe that at all. I've seen the military use drones for surveillance, and are pretty goddamn effective. And it seems everybody and their brother's buying drones for whatever purpose.
Yeah, you've been in that room in the White House.
Yep, I was. And now that's a little extreme as far as...
Right.
I'm not advocating...
You're not weaponizing
the
drones.
No, I'm not weaponizing. Okay, but there was a proposal in Connecticut, the legislature, to weaponize. The state police wanted to have weaponized drones. I think that's a bit extreme.
That thing could be hijacked by some teenager.
No, I agree with you. I'm a little suspicious of that concept.
All right, let's think of the politics now. As far as I'm concerned, and maybe I'm wrong, Bill, but you could have all these dramatic candidates, but the only ones that count to me are the ones that could run the city. Of the ones who could run the city out there, there's you, there's Paul Vallis, Tony Preckwinkle, maybe Gary Chico. Mm-hmm. If you can give up all that law business.
Well,
I don't see Susana Mendoza is a dynamic candidate. She might have some petition problems. I don't see her as having the chops to run the city yet. Is that like sexist of me?
Well, some people may think that, but I think you're a pretty astute observer of politicians over many years and the process and the system. My career is very different than most of the people you named. I've been in the private sector except for two stints in the government, and I don't hold that out that therefore a business person, because quite frankly, in my opinion, the president and Mr. Rauner had business success. I don't think that necessarily carries over into government or politics, but I have been around government and politics my whole life, even though I've never run for office of any note or held public office in elected sense. So I think that blend, I'm not at lobbying, I'm not running for office so year after year, so I've been in private sector, but around government and politics, so I understand it, and I understand the difference between the private sector, but there is a lot, whether it's technology use, whether it's trying to use technology to make the government more efficient, effective. I think we've got to take a serious look at how we're structured. It's basically still functioning like it did when my dad was mayor. He got elected 80 years ago or something like that.
One basic thing about that, Bill, mm-hmm. is that your father, for all the criticism he got, understood that, that whole good government is good politics.
Right, right.
People care. We can talk about all the drones and the fancy thing. People want their garbage picked up. They want their, cops on the street. They want the potholes fixed. I'm wondering whether if this streets and sand system that has gone to a sort of wide grid system is really not productive compared to having it, the streets and sand ward by ward. I mean, there's ward superintendents, but no... What do they do now?
Yeah, I
wonder, could we go? Do you think it might be a wiser thing to go back to the ward system and then have that way you'd have aldermen directly responsible for their wards?
Well, I believe that accountability, whether it's in business or in government, is really important. I think that you're right. There's not a You know, and I've been saying this a lot. There's not a progressive or a conservative or a liberal way to pick up garbage or to clean up a street or fix a light pole. I was out in Austin yesterday meeting with a group of business leaders out there, and they were talking about the simple sort of replacing of light poles that are all rusted out. They said, you know, you're in Oak Park, which is maybe a half a mile away, and it's a totally different feel. You cross the street in Chicago, the dirt, the hollowed out light poles or the no garbage cans, and you know, that adds to the belief that this is a really bad place. And the basics, you know, and some people criticize, some people like my brother and my father, that's fine. But I think a constant, which is this idea that we've got to focus on the little things. As mayor, I can't solve global warming. Truth is, I really can't solve the gun problem, okay? It's a national issue. Can't solve immigration, okay? But we could pick up the garbage, we can fill potholes, we can try to make places clean, and we can do a whole bunch of other things. That's basically what people want. And a lot of the frustration and anger you talked about earlier, John, about property taxes is they think, I pay all of this, and what the heck am I getting for this?
So would you consider going back, reverting back to the ward by ward streets and sand system rather than this grid thing that they put?
You know, I don't have an opinion that one works and the other didn't. There were lots of complaints about the old system. But all I know is I want to use the most effective, efficient way to do that and be able to hold people accountable and responsible and make it a little more transparent. You know, that it's not some grand mystery. What I don't want to do is go back to some system that was based around the politics of that alderman and ward superintendent having some deal between themselves when the mayor is responsible for the city, okay? So I'm not going to say, well, I don't have anything to do with that. That's the alderman. Go talk to the alderman. The aldermen are vital parts of this city, but they're not a mayor of each ward. Or thinking that they should control everything in City Hall that relates to their ward. That's not going to be the case. I hope I have a terrific relationship with the alderman. There'll be probably plenty of new ones, and that's a good thing for the city. And I want to work with them and listen to them. But, you know, we will all be in this together, all 50 aldermen. And so I'm excited about the chance to work with them, but I haven't made up my mind on one way or the other on that issue.
You know, your role politically that I always saw it when your brother was mayor was when he'd go off on a tangent, if he lost his temper or he said
No, right,
because I've never seen it.
Yeah, right.
Right.
None
but
of it ever.
People would call you on background. It would be, Bill, what about this thing? What about this? And that's where your connections with media came over the years,
right?
But I have to ask you before we go, 1980, because I was at lunch at Gene and Giorgetti with a bunch of old-time reporters the other day. 1980, the word was, Bill Daley says, no, my brother's running for clerk.
Yeah, I did.
He said, my brother's running for clerk, and all these old-time reporters, Jimmy Strong and others, Jimmy said, I was in the meeting with the labor bosses, and it was Rich Daley for state's attorney. And everyone said, no, no, no. So the Tribune, the Sun-Times, all said Rich Daley is running for clerk. And then the next day he announces he's running for state's attorney, and everyone said, what the heck with Bill Daley? What was Bill Daley doing?
Well, to be honest with you,
so you got to explain that kind of lie.
Sure, I'll explain it all. All the so-called political insiders thought Rich Daley was going to run for county clerk because
you said so.
No, well, first of all, because that's where the patronage jobs were, and that's all Daley would want. That's what they want, the jobs. They're into all of that. So I knew that what Rich was really focused on and was going to announce was state's attorney. So I was trying to avoid the press, and the late Basil Talbot of the Sun-Times at the time was kind of the dean of the political reporters. Yeah. And so he called me, I'll never forget it, on a Friday, and he said, I'm going to I think it was Kansas City for the Republican midterm convention or something.
Yeah, because he'd love to be with the Republicans.
Yeah, yeah, right. So,
no, I'm joking.
No. So he said, I'm going to be at that for the weekend. So I'm writing my Sunday story. Now, we're all predicting that it's going to be Clerk, right? I made the mistake of taking the call. Well, if I had told him the truth, it would have been the headline, and the politicians would have gotten wind of it, and they would have stopped Rich.
Burke, okay? And the regular Democrats.
But when Rich showed up Monday after that headline, they were still all anticipating him to be for Clerk. Basil, I must say, he had a few choice words, and it probably took many years before he actually re-engaged in a...
So the Trib had the
way.
Same front page.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, but the only
it's
one
all
I really
because of Bill
no,
Daley,
but the only
everybody.
One I told that to because I ducked everyone the last number of days was Talbot because he caught me. I forget why I got caught on that one, and what I was trying to do was duck everybody had I admitted he was going to do state's attorney, the insiders would have stymied him even quicker than they tried to, and then they got Ed Burke, dragged him out, put him in, Rich clobbered him.
And, it was Jane Byrne.
It was everybody.
And also Royko was, you know, I mean, people don't, I know Mike was a saint to everybody, but he ripped the hell out of Bernie Carey for state's attorney. He backed your brother. It was like a big deal.
Yeah, it was a big switch. And all of the political insiders on the Democratic side who were pledged
the
their fealty
were you.
To my dad all were against Rich for this Republican state's attorney in a general election in the Reagan landslide, and Rich won by 16,000 votes. That's all sort of the political game of the past. That system is all gone, or almost all gone.
All right, so if I call
most of the
you,
characters are all gone.
If I call you in the, you know, like say on a Friday afternoon on deadline, is there some like, is you know, I don't know, is there some unicorn emoji you could click to me?
No, I just won't take your calls on a Friday afternoon.
That's how's perfect. That? That's a good way to start this thing.
No, I look at those are different years, different times. The politics is very different. Great old stories, but they really have very little relevance to the next 4 years for this city.
Well, we'll see about that. But Bill Daley, candidate for mayor of Chicago. What do we call you? The mayoral brother of mayor, son of mayor.
How about Bill?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Good. Okay, Bill.
I like that one.
Thanks for
that's
being here.
That's been with me longer than anything else. So.
Thanks for being here on
thanks,
the Chicago
John. Appreciate it.
Has been quite the Chicago way of Chicago ways with Bill Daley and the whole Krupa incident, and
that's something.
I mean, nothing is more Chicago than that, for sure. We'd like to thank everybody for listening, obviously, and Bill Daley and Michael Dorff for joining us with his insight on what's happening there. But I want to thank you, the listeners, always for listening and sharing, and please find us on iTunes, write us a review, pass it on, share it on all your social media. We're growing hard and we're growing strong, but we need your help. Please share it on social media. John and I will retweet you for sure. We're scared little puppies waiting for our turn.
Yeah, we need help.
Right, we need your help, but we really appreciate it always in the Chicago way. And as we always remember, nothing is as it seems, even with a unicorn on the Chicago way.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. Talk to you soon.